Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Okay, are we ready in the control room there? Okay, Jim, remember your three S's, star, smile, strong. Okay, here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNPlus.com. A new episode every Monday, posted at WGNPlus.com. And don't forget to go to the landing page, where you will be able to find all previous 111 episodes. Because this is episode number 112. So yes, 112 episodes, and thank you for joining me on this little podcasting journey that I have been on now since May of, I believe, what, 2016? Is that possible? Wow. So anyway, what I want to talk about today was I mentioned that I was recently in Los Angeles. And one of the highlights of the trip was not just going to see the Dodgers and the Cubs play at Dodger Stadium, which is something that I always wanted to do, to go to Dodger Stadium. Never been there before. And saw the Cubs play the Dodgers, and an exciting game capped by a Javier Baez grand slam, which broke the game wide open. And I was surprised at all the Cub fans there. Lots of Cub jerseys there, which made me feel certainly like I was not so much in enemy territory. And the fans were very, very cool sitting in. And I think that the Dodger fans couldn't, the Dodger fans didn't have much choice. Lots and lots of Cub fans walking around. And proud of it, all wearing Cub jerseys, certainly not incognito, wearing their Cubby blue and proud of it. And then, as I mentioned, we also went to the Hollywood Bowl. Always wanted to go to the Hollywood Bowl, one of the classic venues in this country, to see a concert. And doesn't look like Elton is going to be playing there again, maybe, but certainly isn't on his current itinerary. And so I wanted to go and see that. So as luck would have it, while we were in town, Rod Stewart and Cyndi Lauper were there. So we went to see a concert there, and it was a very cool experience and an excellent show. But I have to tell you, as much as those, you know, big event kind of things, which were planned, made for a fun small little vacation of about 2 or 3 days, 4 days maybe total. What really, for me, was the highlight was something that was, as it usually is, isn't this always the way, was something completely unexpected, something that came somewhat out of the blue and turned out to be not only a great highlight of our trip, but I think is going to wind up being a very exciting and lasting memory, lifetime memory. And as I mentioned to you in a couple of podcasts earlier about bucket lists and you know, and dreams and things like that, a little dotted line connection to that is what this story is all about today. So as I mentioned a couple of podcasts ago, I was recently in a production of the play Glengarry Glen Ross here in the Chicago area. It's a Pulitzer Prize-winning play written by David Mamet, who has gone on to write and direct other plays, as well as films. You may have seen the film House of Games and Things Change and State and Maine, and he's written plays including Sexual Perversity in Chicago and American Buffalo and Oleana, and one of America's most preeminent playwrights. And Glengarry Glen Ross, as I said, won the Pulitzer in 1984 for Mamet, and also won a Tony Award for its main star, who at the time was a relative unknown, certainly in the Broadway world, by the name an actor named Joe Mantegna, who played the role of Richard Roma, a very slick and convincing and successful real estate salesman, but kind of the salesman that sells swampland in Florida, literally. Not just a home that you would see as a realtor. This was more of a investment kind of land, but a real estate salesman all the same. And it's just a charged role, lots of different layers and dimensions to it, and it really is a great role for any actor who want to play it. I mean, if you're an actor, you certainly, you know, want to play Richard Roma at one point, just because there's so many different facets to the character, and he's such a pivotal part to so many different parts in the play. So, as I said, that was a role that even before I was acting, when I first saw Joe Mantegna in this role back in 1986 in a touring production of the same play here in Chicago at the Blackstone Theater, I was just riveted by the character and by Joe Mantegna's performance. And somewhere in the back of my mind, I said to myself, boy, it would be kind of cool to play that role if I ever went on stage. And perseverance and a little luck and a lot of patience. And 30-some years later, I got my opportunity to play Richard Roman. As I said in the podcast a couple of weeks ago, the experience completely, the whole experience, not only met my hopes and dreams and expectations, but even exceeded them, which is very rare. But when it does happen, and I hope it happens to you as well, in whatever your hopes and dreams may be, it's just an amazing feeling. And as I said, 2018 will always go down in my mind as a very memorable year, because if for anything else, getting a chance to finally play this role in this play, and it was a production that I was proud of as well, of not just being able to play the role, but it was a well-presented and well-directed and well-acted play by everybody, and audiences enjoyed it, and it was just a very fulfilling creative experience. And I thought that it would end at that, just what I just said. In fact, when I spoke about it a couple weeks ago, that's where it had ended, and I was just very pleased that I was able to you know, check off one of those long-time goals. And then something else happened and made this experience go to another level, which I never dreamed it ever could have. But once again, it's just having a little perseverance and having a little drive and ambition and putting yourself out there sometimes. Once again, these kind of things will not just happen. You have to sort of sometimes make your luck and make your opportunities. And then when those opportunity comes, that's when you step up and hopefully deliver. But you also have to work it on the other side, too, to make those opportunities, to be there when the opportunity is available and be ready to deliver when it shows itself. So I have a friend who knows Joe Mantegna. He is from the Chicago area. He was born in the Garfield Park area of Chicago. And then early in his life, his family moved to Cicero. And that's where he is mostly known for coming from in this area, the Cicero area. He went to Morton East High School in the Cicero area. And he's most identified with being from Cicero. In fact, I didn't even know he was born in Chicago and raised in his early life in the Chicago area in Garfield Park. But anyway, so I have a friend who knows, who has had some dealings with him and actually had a personal email and phone number. And so as the show was winding down, I asked him. I said, "Look, I said, do you think it's possible that I could you can just give me Joe Montana's email and maybe grease the skids for me, because I really would like to tell him how much of an inspiration he was to me for this role and perhaps even getting into acting, which I do enjoy. I love radio. It is and always will be my first love. But I certainly enjoy acting as well, and have been pursuing it equally here, especially in the last several years. And so I said, look, I just want to thank him for the inspiration and let him know that I saw him in this role, as I said, the story 32 years ago, and now I had a chance to actually play it, and I'm having a great time, and I just wanted to thank him. And he said, well, yeah, let me send him an email, just let him know that you might be contacting him. And then, and actually a couple of years ago, I had him on the radio, on a radio show that I was hosting at WGN, because I was in another play that he was associated with. If you ever heard of the play Bleacher Bums, about the Cub fans out in the bleachers, especially specifically written during the late 70s when the team was really bad, and then it was updated in the late 80s when they got a little better. But it still performed quite a bit, especially around here in Chicago. And it's a fun play, and it was written by Joe Montana and collaborated with other members of, at the time, the Organic Theater, which was a small but a very respected theater group in Chicago in the mid to late 70s. And he was a guiding force of that and came up with this idea. He's a huge Cub fan. And after going to a Cub game one day and sitting in the bleachers, he was observing all these characters around him. And now the bleachers are very different, believe me, folks. The bleachers now are the place to be and the cool place to hang out and be seen. And the tickets are over $100. And, you know, it's more of a an outdoor patio than it is even a baseball game. But back then, the bleachers were considered the worst seats in the house. They were the cheapest seats in the house. And that's why, you know, that's where the true baseball fans who didn't have a lot of money went out and watched a Cub game. Out in the bleachers. They were considered the worst seats because they were the farthest away. They were out in the outfield. They didn't have that mystique that they have now as being the best and the coolest seats, despite their distance away from the action, because it's more of a scene today. But back then, it was a place for the broken down, diehard Cub fans to sit. And so Montana was observing all these different characters who lived and died with the team and lived and died with every pitch, which was just, you know, amazing. And so he said, wow, I think there's a play here. And he was right, and it still is done. And so I had him on the radio show to get some tips to help, you know, to help me with one of the characters that he helped create. So I did have, some initial connection with him, but I never talked to him in person about Glengarry Glen Ross. An interesting side note, I did meet him on a couple of occasions. It seems like our paths always crossed, and that's why it's been an interesting little thing over the last 30 some years. He's always been a favorite actor of mine. And by chance and by professional opportunity, our paths have crossed. Back in 1989, I was writing for a local newspaper in the Chicago suburbs. And Joe Montana came back to Chicago and directed a version of Bleacher Bums. He did not star in it this time like he did originally. But he directed it, and the local actor Dennis Farina, sadly the late Dennis Farina, played the lead in it, played the role that Joe Montana originated. And what's funny, if you ever want to see this, go on YouTube, because the original cast of Bleacher Bums from the 70s, the production was recorded, and it was shown on Channel 11 on PBS here in Chicago. And you can see that original production on YouTube. So if you have any interest in that, go to YouTube and just hit Bleacher Bums 1977, and you will see Joe Montana. You will see a young Dennis Franz from NYPD Blue, who was also in that production. So it's certainly worth checking out and getting a sense of what it was like to be a Cub fan in the 70s, especially, and sitting in the bleachers. But so I had a chance to meet Joe Montagna in 1989, and I wrote a story about him. I interviewed him, and I wrote a story about the play and him coming back to Chicago and directing it this time as opposed to starring in it and things like that. And then talk about a weird, kind of stroke of luck or a weird just chance and opportunity. I was flying home one day from Los Angeles on business, and as odd as it seems, I was walking to my seat, and I was in coach. I was not in first class by any means, and I'm walking to my seat, and lo and behold, I recognize Joe Montagna. And it looks like he's in my row. You know what I mean? I mean, he's in my row. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Because like I said, I'm a fan of his. And so I sit down, and it's in those configurations where there's two seats and three seats and two seats. And so it's just Joe Montagna and me. And so at first, and this is before, I guess, he was flying first class or private. He was still flying coach. It had to be in the early 90s. And we started, I didn't say anything. And then after we started to fly, it is a 3.5-4 hour flight. I just introduced myself and told him, I'm sure you don't remember, but I did meet you several years ago or a few years ago, and we talked about Bleacher Bums, and we talked about the Cubs, because he's a huge Cub fan, and we had a really nice conversation on the flight home. And once again, I was not acting at this time. I mentioned I saw him in Glengarry and things like that. And we just had a nice conversation. It was just an interesting and a fortunate chance meeting, and it was just a neat experience. So flash forward now to 2018, and so my friend gives me Joe Montagna's email and gives him a heads up that I might be contacting him and why. And so I sat down and I wrote a nice email and just reintroduced myself, and I said, look, I just want to let you know that I saw you, in Glengarry, more than 30 years ago. I was just really taken with your performance and taken with the play itself. And it was very inspiring, and I've always wanted to play this role. And then I started acting, and it was always a dream role of mine. And I've always been looking for productions of this play to audition for. And I had auditioned for a couple other, productions over the last, 10 years or so, and did not get cast. And, every year passed, I was getting more and more paranoid because, the character has a certain age range, and I was beginning to get, push the outer edges of that age range. And so I really wanted to make sure I could play this part, and I wound up getting cast in this production. And I just wanted to, in the email, I just said, thank you so much. And I quoted a couple of the lines from the play, and I just said, blah, blah, blah. And I sent them a picture of our cast. And I was, much to my surprise, within a couple of, I would say, maybe a half hour, he sent me back an email thanking me for my kind words, and so I came back to him and I said, oh, just so you know, he owns him and his wife own a small restaurant in the Los Angeles area called Taste Chicago, which is a place for Chicago people to go if you want to have a taste for some real good Chicago food, like a Chicago style Italian beef sandwich or a Chicago hot dog or Chicago-style pizza and things like that. And it's not a big place. It's not a fancy place. It's decorated with a lot of Cub memorabilia and Joe Montagna's acting memorabilia. And it's just outside of Los Angeles in Burbank, about a half hour away or so, not too far. And so I wanted to visit it because I've always heard about it, and I just mentioned, my wife and I might be stopping there to get a good Chicago beef. And he actually made the offer and said, well, if you're going to be there, let me know, remind me, and maybe I can join you for lunch, which I thought was a very nice offer. And I figured, in the long run, I'm sure he wasn't, you know, he's going to find, you know, wasn't going to really do it, probably, which I understood. And that was, you know, I was just kind of like, who knows? So the play ended. We had a very successful run. As I said, it was very enjoyable. And so a couple of days before we were going out to Los Angeles, I did send him an email back and said, geez, you know, I don't know if you remember last week, I touched base with you and mentioned my Glengarry experience, and you did offer to meet us for lunch. And please, you know, no obligations. You have been more than generous up to this point. Just responding to me has been, you know, above and beyond. So please don't feel any obligations to meet us. But also, I would kick myself if I didn't at least bring up the offer and see if you're still interested. And once again, within, you know, half hour or so, I get an email back and he said, you know, maybe I could meet you on Monday, you know, when while we were out there at noon or so. So I'm like, fantastic. And my wife is a big fan of the show Criminal Minds, which Joe Montana has been on now for, what, about 10 or 11, you know, 12 years. She's a huge fan of the show. I like it, and I watch it with her, but she really enjoys the show a lot. So this is going to be kind of a thrill for both of us. It wasn't just my my thrill. She was excited to meet him because she enjoys the show so much, enjoys his character. So we're all excited, and you know, his character on the show is David Rossi, and he's you know, he plays up his Italian roots, and he's kind of a suave guy, really cool kind of thing, and he likes his red wines. So we you know, when we went to lunch, we went to a wine shop in Santa Monica and bought a nice bottle of wine to thank him for, you know, his kindness and for taking time of his schedule to meet with us and have lunch. And I also brought my script with me from Glengarry Glen Ross because I wanted him to you know, to sign my script. And so we get to the restaurant, and a couple minutes later, in he walks, and as nice and unassuming and egoless as possible, considering you know, his celebrity and his career. He was on Joan of Arcadia. He's been in Woody Allen movies. Joe Montana was in Godfather 3. Okay, I mean, Godfather 3. If you're an actor and you get cast in any of the Godfather films, even though the Godfather 3 isn't considered by many to be in the same level of entertainment quality as the first two were from the 70s, it doesn't matter. Joe Montana still worked with Francis Ford Coppola, worked with Al Pacino, worked with you know, Andy Garcia in that film, and is part of the Godfather history. So that alone is a career making and a career moment. And so he definitely could walk around and have a big ego, and he couldn't be more nice, more welcoming, more embracing. And we sat down and we talked about his career, and then, you know, he said, so tell me about Glengarry. And he's asking me about my experience. And so it was great, and we sat and we talked, and I told him about you know, my portrayal, and now I was kind of kicking myself because he was so open and he was so you know, into this. I wish I would have thought about contacting him while I was rehearsing the play to have gotten some tips from him. But then again, maybe it was as I think about it, because clearly he would have offered some advice, because he was, you know, very demonstrative and very open when we were talking about the play now and some of the choices and some of the ways that he delivered lines. Because I was asking him, oh, well, what about this scene? I was always grappling with, or how, you know, what do you think Roma was thinking at this point? And that's the kind of thing that, you know, you do as an actor. You try to make this character come alive and be as real as possible and make those, you know, and the way that you react and the way that you deliver a line really can make a difference into how the character is being portrayed. And so there were a few moments there that I asked him about that I thought were especially interesting to me as I was developing my take on the role. And I certainly didn't want to imitate him. And there's a movie version of Glengarry Glen Ross, if you've never seen it, with Al Pacino and Kevin Spacey and Alec Baldwin and Jack Lemmon and Alan Arkin and Ed Harris. It's an excellent movie. And I didn't want to, you know, copy Al Pacino's performance as well. But at the same time, you've got two great actors like Joe Mantegna and Al Pacino in this role. And you certainly, and as I said, Joe Mantegna originated the role. So for me, I think to get his insights, you know, were important because he's the guy who took that character off the printed page and brought him to life for the first time. And so part of me kind of kicked myself for not maybe contacting him, but I figured, what are the odds that even if I thought about contacting him, would he even respond? I mean, so it was kind of a far-fetched idea. But I was actually, in retrospect, I'm kind of glad I did it my own way. And then it was fun to talk to him about it and talk about the choices he made and the choices that I made. And in some cases, we were right there with one another. And so I was happy to know that I think I captured the character in a way that did it justice, because even though it had been 30-some years since I saw him do it, the role seemed very fresh to him. He still remembered many of the lines. It was very cool. He remembered many of the lines, and he really, I mean, it was obviously, that was a that play was a career-changing moment for him. It elevated him. He won the Tony Award. It led to other shows on Broadway. It led to other movies, and just it just started his career of getting exposure to movers and shakers. So it's very important to him, you could tell, and he still remembers it like it was yesterday. And so it was just really, it was one of those moments, as I said before, and one of those kind of things that you certainly have to take a step back and say, okay, this is really cool. This is really important. I am making a memory right now. You know, sometimes our memories happen of events and we don't even really know about them until after they're done, and you go, wow, well, that was cool. I'll never forget that, because so much of life is random. But here was something that was playing out, and while it was playing out, I knew that this was going to be it was turning into a great experience in the moment, and it would certainly turn into and forever be a great memory for years to come. And and I'm sure, you know, so I said, please, you know, if you have another, you know, if you don't have to stay with us very long, once again, I appreciate you taking the time. And he said, no, I've got about an hour, so I've got another appointment, but, we have time. And I don't blame him. He set up something else so that, he could leave gracefully. And, if things got a little weird, once again, we had never met, he just, had a couple of emails back and forth. So he didn't know really what to expect. But we clearly got along very well. And we were bonding on, not only the Glengarry experience that we both shared, but then with the Cubs and his career and, show business in general and acting, because I I'm a big, pop culture kind of fan. So it was really just a very easy and enjoyable conversation, to the point that on two occasions he called his other appointment. So he really did have an appointment. I mean, I understand he's an actor, so maybe he didn't. He was just acting. And if he was, yes, he is an actor then. But, he was still looking, and he pushed his appointment back, another hour. And I heard him say, yeah, I'll be there in about, I'll be there about 2:00. So we met at noon. And so sure enough, he spent almost a full hour with us, and it was just so enjoyable, and we both had a good time, and we took pictures, and he hugged my wife, and it was everything I could have expected, and then once again more. And who knows, he said, hey, now you know how to get in touch with me, so hopefully we'll get back together, we'll get together again soon. I said, hey, anytime you come to Chicago or I come back to Los Angeles. So I don't know what the future that made it, this meeting and this conversation that we had, maybe the last time, but even if it was, it doesn't matter. It was just really exciting and fun, and pleasing, and it added another layer to this Glengarry Glen Ross experience, because now not only did I see the play 30 years ago, wind up getting in the play finally and having a great experience in the run and it being everything that I'd hoped it'd been and more, as I said, but then I get a chance to meet the guy whose role inspired me to want to play it, his portrayal, and I get to meet him and get his insights, and we bond over that. And so talk about icing on the cake. But once again, I had to make that idea. I had to get that idea, and I had to make the decision to take that step and send that email to him. He could have easily not responded, and that would have been it. But thankfully, he did, I think, for both of us. I think it was fun for him to hear somebody excited and inspired by his work. Every actor appreciates that, and I certainly appreciated his time and his sharing. And the coolest thing that I think we both kind of looked at one another and realized, okay, we are bonding here, that this is kind of a neat experience that I probably both of us did not expect. So, as I said, I bought this bottle of wine for him, and we brought one of those little wine bags, you know, the long bags that you put the wine in as a gift bag. And so it had a card attached to it. And so on the card, since he originated the role of Richard Roma in Glengarry Glen Ross and won the Tony Award for it, I wrote, "To the," T-H-E, and underlined it several times, "to the Richard Roma, from a fellow Richard Roma," because I was just one of many people who have played that role, obviously. But he's the Richard Roma. He will always be the Richard Roma, even though Al Pacino is in the movie version. Joe Mantegna is Richard Roma. He originated it on Broadway. And even here in Chicago before it went to Broadway. And so I gave him my script to sign. And I didn't know what he was writing, but he wrote on the front of it. And he hadn't read the card that I wrote or added. You know, he didn't read my inscription on the card on the bottle of wine. He just looked at the bottle of wine and he said, "Oh, this looks like it's going to be a nice bottle." And so he gives me the script back after he writes it on it. He autographs it and he says, "To Jim, from one Roma to another Roma." And I see this and I said, "Oh, well, that's perfect. And look what I wrote." And my, which I wrote the day before, was "to the Richard Roma from a fellow Richard Roma." So we were still on the same page right there with the same kind of sentiment that we offered each other. So I thought that was a nice little coincidence. And once again, kind of showed that, you know, we were kind of bonding on this. And so, as I said, just a nice little addendum and, you know, strawberry on the sundae to my entire Glengarry Glen Ross experience. And I thought I would share that with you because I did talk so much about the whole idea of the play itself and striving to be in it. And I thought this was a completely unexpected added bonus to the entire Glengarry experience, which now is came full circle, and talk about symmetry. And so I thought, since I told you about that a few weeks ago, that I would add this last piece that really, you know, solidifies it as a great memory and a great experience and something that I am so proud to have achieved as well as pursued. And so once again, just to add what I said a few weeks ago about going after your dreams or your goals, they can come to you, but you have to put effort into them. They won't just come out of the blue. They just don't happen. You got to take some initiative, but believe you me, especially after this whole experience over the last couple of months here, it's well worth the effort and well worth the time if something really is important to you. So once again, thanks to Joe Mantegna, who has just proved to be a nice guy, a true Chicago boy, if you will, who hasn't let fame go to his head, and who took some time out of his busy schedule to spend some time with my wife and I. And thank you, Joe. It will always be a great day and a great memory. And we're back here with Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and now we go to the place that we all enjoy, and it's not Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory. It's the Pop Culture Club with Emily Arminetti. How you doing, Emily?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Very good, and we are once again, I'm recording this now at my home, and you sound very good on the old Skyper there.
Yeah.
Yeah, very good.
It's the it's the earbuds.
So was it Airbud or Earbud?
Earbud, okay. Earbud. Airbud. You know, the first time I went to Europe, it was probably maybe around the time that we started working together. It was like in the late 90s. Uh-huh. And so I flew to Paris from Chicago. And it was back then when you didn't have like your own, you know, seat with right. the screen. You know, you had to just watch whatever was on the screen. And the movie that was on the flight, because there was only one movie, was Air Bud 2.
Oh, like, not even
Air Bud. It was Air Bud 2.
Oh, God.
It's like, I mean, at that point, you might as well not even show a film, right? Yeah.
Well, that still happens on a lot of, I mean, most of the Atlantic, transatlantic flights do have your own little screen now, but on some domestic flights, they still have the one movie that they show, like it or not.
Yeah.
Which is, most of the time.
This is a bad one,
wow,
right?
Airbud
it's the one
two.
Bad movie, yeah.
Speaking of bad movies, I think there's a bad movie being made in real life here, and that's what I wanted to talk about today in the Pop Culture Club. So I'd love to get your take on this because, I don't know, maybe I'm just an old crusty white guy here, but which is becoming more and more of a thing.
Yeah.
The poor white male. Wow. We are getting just, just blown away here in this part of the century. But anyway, so I'm watching television and I'm looking and I'm surfing around on the internet superhighway. And all I'm seeing over the last several weeks is Ariana Grande and Pete Davidson.
Yes.
I know. He's from Saturday Night Live and she's obviously one of the pop divas of the moment.
Yes.
And they're both in their early 20s. I think he's 24. I'm not sure how old she is. They probably met on... Did they meet on Saturday Night Live? Do you know?
Well, I think... She has appeared on SNL a couple of times over the last, like, 3 or 4 years. I mean, she was, like, obviously, like, a musical guest because she's a pop star. And then I think she did... She was actually a guest host at one point. I'm not sure if she was also the musical guest on that. Sometimes they do that if a musician is going to be the guest host, they kind of do double duty. So she's definitely they would have had occasion to meet each other,
In the past.
Couple of times, right?
Well, something happened.
Something happened.
Yeah, and wow, did it happen in a big way. So, I mean, these two went from, they were not in the news at all. And this Pete Davidson has been on Saturday Night Live for 2 or 3 years now. And if you don't know who he is, he's this young guy, very tall, very skinny, very odd looking guy. It's not like he's some, Romeo kind of,
Yeah, he's not. I mean, I hate to say when someone is punching above their weight, but
yeah, right, exactly.
We'll just leave it there.
I don't know what it is. Once again, everybody talk. Oh, well, it's probably his sense of humor, and women always say, "Oh, I love I think a sense of humor is so important." It's like, yeah, but you also are standing next to Brad Pitt. So,
yeah, and for all we know, I don't know Brad Pitt, but he could be super funny.
Yeah, well,
I mean, so,
Well, if he does, it's just an added bonus, let's be honest.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Give me a break.
Right.
So anyway, so all of a sudden, these two pop out of nowhere, and they are on all the gossip sites and in all the magazines and all the tabloids. And, once again, they're in their 20s, and so they hit that demographic and he's on Saturday Night Live, which the show has obviously gotten a rebirth with the whole Donald Trump with the Alec Baldwin. So the people on that show now have a higher profile. Mm-hmm. And in now and in fact, you know, talk about that show being you know, a place where people's reputations, and to your point about sort of dating above your station. So who's the guy that does the weekend update?
Colin
Jost?
Colin Jost.
He's going out with Scarlett Johansson.
He is. That said, though, I think he is kind of cute.
Oh, I know. I understand.
Pete Davidson, I don't think I would describe him. Well, okay. I mean, look, again, I'm being mean. See, you're making me be mean here. I don't want to be mean to anyone. I'm not that into him.
Oh, but I'm saying
everybody is different, you know.
Right. No, but I'm just saying you would never think that the guy that is, you know, on Saturday Night Live hosting Weekend Update, regardless of how good looking he is or a nice guy, you just wouldn't think he would have a shot with someone of Scarlett Johansson's, star power. I mean, she's a major movie star, agreed as one of the most sexiest women, you know, in Hollywood. So you would never think that a guy that hosts Weekend Update would be with her, but sure enough. And so this Pete Davidson somehow, you know, wins the lottery. But here's the thing. So I just want to get your take on this. I understand. And this has been going on since the beginning of Hollywood. We all enjoy Hollywood romances. And we love to watch, you know, two stars get together. And we've been through the, you know, going way back. And I'll even, you know, blow your mind if you need to be reminded of this, because this is before my time, too. But I'm just sort of going back. We remember, you know, Debbie Reynolds and Eddie Fisher. And then Elizabeth Taylor stole Eddie Fisher from Debbie Reynolds. And then we remember Elizabeth Taylor again. She was quite the the newsmaker. Then she went out with Richard Burton. And they had a tumultuous marriage and courtship. And it was always Liz and Dick. And they were tabloid fodder before the tabloids were even tabloids. There used to be movie magazines like Photoplay and things like that, and they were on every cover. And then, of course, you know, in more modern times, you know, we've had your Jennifer Anistons and your Brad Pitts and all these, you know, romances and with big stars together. I get it. I understand. It's always been a fascination. But wow, this Pete Davidson, Ariana Grande thing. Within, it just goes to show you how the internet and everything, it just speeds everything up. This went from this Pete Davidson being relatively unknown to all of a sudden everybody in the country knows his name, to within 2 or 3 days after the news broke they were going out, he was on the Jimmy Fallon show for the first time.
Oh, that was for the first time?
Well, he made a comment about Jimmy Fallon. You never had me on before.
Right. Okay, so even he's recognizing that.
I think he realizes he won the lottery. But my point is, why do you think we're so obsessed with these two now?
Well, I mean, look, she's a huge pop star. So, of course, you know, there's a certain tabloid interest, I suppose, in her. And so, you know, things like whatever she's doing is naturally going to be followed to some extent. But I do think that part of the fascination is that they are just kind of an unlikely couple. And also, it could also be that this is all kind of happening so fast. Like, they started, do you know who he was dating before he started dating her? He was dating Larry David's daughter.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So Cassie David, Larry David's daughter,
is she bald with glasses or no?
No, she's really cute, actually. She's really cute. She herself, I mean, she's young, 20-something, living in, I think, New York.
And she's got a pretty dowry.
Yeah, well, that. I think she's a writer of sorts, like, or of some description. I'm not really sure exactly, like, what her professional creds are, I know she's kind of bills herself as a writer.
Yeah.
And so they were actually dating for a while. he broke up with her. Well, I shouldn't say he broke up with her. They broke up in May. He confirmed that they had broken up in May. And then, like, a week later, he was dating Ariana Grande. So I think it's also, like, the accelerate. And then like, within a month or so, these two were engaged.
Right.
So
I mean, it's not just they're going out. They're engaged. In fact, yes. I don't know who's the owner, but apparently they bought a $16 million penthouse in New York.
Oh, I had not read that yet. But the other thing is, I'm sure that this is something that is probably like one of those things that probably I bet you probably struggle to get your head around. They also have matching tattoos.
Apparently he had to cover up a previous tattoo of a girl's name.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he had a previous girl's name tattooed, so he had to cover that one up.
Well, and you know, so it doesn't get more permanent than a tattoo, so...
Yeah, well, ask Johnny Depp.
Yeah, right? Well, yeah,
with his, exactly. He had his Winona forever, and then it changed it to Wino forever.
Yes.
Yeah, and so...
Yeah, the infamous Wino forever. But, they have matching tattoos. Actually, they've both been getting separate tattoos referencing the other one. The last thing I read is that... So now, you know his backstory, right? His father was a firefighter who was killed on September 11th.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. So his father was, I think he was one of the firefighters who was in... If not the World Trade Center, one of the adjacent buildings that also, like, collapsed. And he was last seen going into a building. And very sadly, you know, didn't survive. And that happened when Pete Davidson was really young.
Yeah, right.
And so Pete Davidson has a tattoo of his father's badge number. And because Pete Davidson has a bunch of tattoos, including his new Ariana Grande.
Yeah, he's obviously into
themed
tattoos.
Yeah. But she has also, in addition to the, you know, they got a matching tattoo of like clouds or something, but she also has now had his father's badge number tattooed on her, which fans noticed in a photo. So so they're on that train now. But also I think part of the reason too why this is kind of everywhere is, I mean, again, it's like the nature of the society we live in now. Everything is like on social media, right? So they like Instagram, you know, as soon as they Instagram a photo of their new tattoo or whatever, everybody, you know, it all blows up all over again, you know, because then it's like, oh, now it's, you know, then that gets picked up.
Well, now here's
they're kind of, you know, stoking this fire a little bit too.
These days, every celebrity who's in a romance stokes it. I mean, that's part of the game now. But so here's my question to you right now, as you just rattled all this off. Does it scare you how much you know about Pete Davidson and Ariana Grande? Does it scare? Because I'm scared for you. I'm scared for you right now.
I am scared. Why do I know this much about these people? And you know what's so funny? I feel like I've seen like one article, but I mean, like, I'm vaguely aware that it's everywhere, but I don't even think I've even given much time to it. But yet, still, I know too much.
Right?
Yes, I know too much. It's crazy.
So here's the other part. So Again, I think he realizes, as you said earlier, that he's stepped up way in class. He's way above what he should be getting.
Yeah.
But because he's doing it, but he's doing it right. You know, not only all this tattoo crap. I mean, I think that's a sign of the times. But, you know, every time you see them, they're making out. And then he's going shopping with her. So he's getting like good brownie points with women. Like, oh, he's so sweet. Because he's going shopping with her, and he can't keep his hands off her, and he's so attentive. And so, you know, I think a lot of women, whether they think he's attractive or not is beside the point. They're all rooting for these two because, oh, they're so in love and young love. And, you know, even though they're showing it off and they're actually, you know, playing for the cameras, I think, many times.
Yeah.
Everybody, I mean, that now, as I said many times, you know, narcissism is no longer, you know, something that we step away from. It's now been validated. So they have put their relationship out in the world on a minute-by-minute basis. You know, plenty of public demonstrations of affection. No questions there. But as I watch this, And I would even think, even though you are, you know, you're a romantic at heart, and I think you're rooting for these two, you know, starry-eyed kids. And I,
well, you know, I root for love. You know, that's fine.
I root. Oh, there's a quote. Is that on your license plate? I root for love.
It's tattooed on my ankle.
Wow.
I don't have any tats.
That's your nickname, Emily. I root for love, Arminetti. So Emily, right. I root for love, Arminetti is rooting for love. So clearly, you're rooting for these two, as I said, star-crossed lovers, our version of Romeo and Juliet. But as me playing my role as crusty curmudgeon,
yes,
I have to say, and I would even think you, somebody who is a self-admitted rooter of love, you have to know where this is going.
Well, I guess I know.
You have to know where this is going, and you have to know within 6 months we're going to see the email pop up or the story on the internet say Pete Davidson and Ariana Grande break up. You know this is coming, right? Or are you rooting for love?
Look, I root for anyone who's in love. That's great. You know, I want everyone to be happy. But do I really think they're going to make it to the altar? Look, I don't know. Maybe if they get married as quickly as they got engaged, then maybe they actually will end up getting married. Who knows if that means it'll work out. But I think it seems like it's going to be an uphill battle type situation. I'm no expert, but I feel like this does seem like...
Yeah, I mean, come on. You have to think...
Yes.
...that this is not going to be in a good place. It has every mark of a crash and burn kind of relationship. And yes, I know they're in love and everything is what it is. But it's moving so fast, so quick. We've seen this so many times.
Yeah.
And I'm not hoping it happens. I mean, once again, I mean, hey, these are two people. They're obviously in love, but this seems like so high school.
Yes. They're young.
I know today a 24-year-old is like a 15-year-old. I understand that. But, you know, they are adults. They're not that young. They're 24, 25 years old. You're an adult at 18. So, you know.
You are.
Well, like I said,
that's debatable. It's debatable. When I was 18 years old, I definitely was not responsible
I understand that,
enough.
But when is someone an adult now? When you're 45 or 50?
Well, yeah, I know. I'm still waiting to become one.
Yeah, well,
so I don't know.
That's what drives me crazy, because every so often I've been hearing these millennial terms now of, there is actually a verb called adulting.
Yes, adulting. The millennials like the term adulting.
Oh, what are you, acting like an adult? It's like, no, you're not acting like an adult. You are an adult.
It's like, well, see, this is why my dad always says to me and my siblings, like, okay, that's it. No more Lollapalooza. You people are middle aged.
Is that
okay?
What he said?
Yes. Every year, he's like, that's it.
No more Lollapalooza.
That's right. He's like, you people are middle aged. What are you doing?
So your dad uses Lollapalooza as a dividing kind of event for age?
Or maybe it just goes to show how even though we are middle aged, we still
are clinging,
are not upstanding, adult members of society, because we're still doing things like going to Lollapalooza.
Do you still go to Lollapalooza?
Well, I haven't gone since I moved to Austin, because we have Austin city limits, and honestly, like most years, the lineups are so similar, that I don't really feel the need to.
But if you lived in Chicago, would you go?
Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, of course I would. I actually was, you know, I might actually, I saw the lineup for Riot Fest this this coming fall.
I wouldn't mind going to Riot Fest.
And
Elvis Costello is going to be there.
Elvis Costello, Liz Phair.
Yeah.
Beck's going to be there, which I'm a little disappointed. Beck's not coming to Austin City Limits. So I actually might go to Riot Fest this year. So stay tuned for that.
Yes,
because I don't want to grow up. I want to do.
Want to grow up? Okay, I don't want to grow Pan. Up. Okay, Wendy.
I don't it's way more grow fun. Up. It's way more
I'm
fun.
Sure, I'm to sure. You're, I'm sure your kids are happy to hear that.
I know. I'm barely hanging on by a thread when I have to be. when I have to be an adult because I'm parenting.
At least you're silly enough to admit that you don't want to grow up. Wow,
that's
what a,
right.
What a comment! Yeah. I don't know if I should call DCFS right now.
No, everyone here is very well taken care of. Yes.
I don't want to. Well, today, two major quotes from Emily Armanetti. Yeah. I don't want to grow up, and I root for love.
I root for love, yes. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Oh, my God. But I'm just watching these two, and every day, like you said, they're Instagramming their every moment.
Yes.
Every kiss, every, they went jogging, they went walking, they went shopping, they went for a hamburger. Every moment, as most of, these younger millennials are, every moment of their lives are cataloged now for the world to see. So especially when you put together, a pop star. And once again, I mean, this guy, even though he's been on Saturday Night Live, he's been in a few skits, but he hasn't really, distinguished himself as any major star on that show. He's been on for a while, but it's not like, oh my God, Pete Davidson, who does all those great characters or something.
Right.
But he certainly has elevated his profile now, which I wonder now when the new season for Saturday Night Live starts, are they going to capitalize on his new found notoriety and fame?
I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I'm sure there will be some references, we'll say, to that, but I don't know. I don't know what else they could do, really.
Well, I'm just saying is that suddenly he could be in more skits. Right now, he might be a fringe, fringe player, but they might say, hey, get Pete in more skits because we need him on because he could be a draw for ratings because now everybody knows who Pete Davidson is. Before, he was just one of many, featured players. But now that he is so well known because of this romance, they might say, hey, he's a ratings grabber. People want to see Pete Davidson, so put him in skits. So I it probably cannot hurt. I mean, as we talked a couple of weeks ago, it certainly didn't hurt Tom Arnold's career.
No, it didn't. Well, so we'll see. I mean, I don't know about him, but I think probably you can expect to see Ariana Grande making an appearance or so on in the next season of SNL.
Yeah, that would be, probably will. Yeah, this is, or she may not because, let's see.
Right, if they make it through the summer.
Yeah, I don't think they're, I got news for you. I was being nice when I said 6 months. This is a summer romance. I think once September comes back, they're both going to go back to school.
Right.
I mean, this is like.
You think they're not even going to make it to Labor Day?
No, this is like Greece. This is like. Danny Zuko.
Summer loving.
Yeah, this is like Danny and Sandy. I think as soon as September comes, she goes on tour. He goes back to Saturday Night Live, and it's, it's over.
But who knows? We'll see.
They just seem to be so over the top. And like I said, anybody, even those, I would think, who root for
you,
you have to see through this, and you have to know that this. I mean, do you, let's say you had $1,000, right?
Yeah.
Would you bet that $1,000 that they will get married?
So that's a tough one, because like I said, if they are as, impulsive about the wedding as they were about the engagement, they could actually pull it off, happen quickly. But I think if they're like, okay, and we're going to get married in a year, that's never going to happen. So I guess I would bet no, they will not make it to the wedding. But I feel bad doing that. But
because you root for love.
I do. I know. But I think, it's someone, I think this is, it seems that this type of relationship may be a little bit vulnerable to burning out pretty quickly. Yeah. So.
And so now I just read the other day.
I don't know. Like matching tattoos, I think, is where we draw the line, well, right? Yeah.
It's I mean, I would be surprised. And if they get married, I still say a year and a half. And once again, I'm not trying to be, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, throw water.
You're not trying to be a grumpy old man.
Grumpy white old man. But yeah. I have to say, if they do get married, I mean, the only thing I wonder, and this is purely speculation. I mean, this has happened so fast. I wondered, I mean, could she possibly be pregnant?
Oh, hey, I hadn't even, that thought had not even crossed my mind.
I know, but I haven't heard a whiff of that at all. I'm just saying, I understand infatuation. I understand love at first sight. So, I mean, and I understand they're young, and so they're impulsive, and they're just having these emotions just, you know, hitting 11 on a scale of 10. I get all that. But then I wonder, you know, so it could just be that. It could just be that, you know, that immediate attraction, that immediate magnetism, that immediate, you know, love at first sight, whatever that is, and that happens. I get that. It usually does die out just as quick as it burns, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then at the same time, I'm wondering, you know, to be engaged, it's one thing to have a torrid affair or a torrid romance, but to be engaged so fast, that was kind of the first thing that I thought. I was like, wow, I wonder if we're going to get an announcement in about 3 or 4 months.
Well, I mean, if that is the case, I'm sure it's going to be all over the tabloids in no time. But oh my God, could also just be the case that Pete Davidson said to himself, oh, man, yeah, like, I better lock this down.
Yeah, what a right? Day. I got to put a ring on it.
Right? Yeah, yeah, that's your favorite, Beyonce.
Beyonce. Yes.
Yeah, Beyonce.
Beyonce. Look at, aren't you impressed that I even know
I am
that
very,
lyric?
I am very impressed.
Put a ring on, right? What is it? Single girls or something? What is it?
Single ladies. I think it's single ladies.
Put a
ring
on it. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, so if you like it, put then a ring you in should it. Put a ring on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, so wow.
Or something like that.
He certainly did not, he did not take his time. He realized, wait a minute, I am way, way over my head, but you know what?
Yeah.
For whatever reason, it happened, and I'm taking this to the next level before she decides and sees right through me.
Yeah, lock it down. Lock That's it down. The thing. Yeah.
And just real quickly before we go here, I just read recently that once again, the perennial root, if you root for love, I'm sure this is one of your longtime rooters. I read that Jennifer Aniston is once again back in the dating scene.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Is she like dating anyone in particular?
No, there's two people that are kind of not they're not big stars. They're in the biz, but they're not. They're more behind the scenes people. Apparently she's playing the field, but after once again her second divorce, will love ever find its way for Team Jen?
Wait a second. They're both, she and Brad Pitt are both single again. This seems like a no-brainer to me.
I know.
Me.
I thought for sure that was going to happen. That's just seemed, it was weird the way the stars aligned on that. And I haven't heard anything. So who knows? Maybe this is camouflage and maybe they are back together. Or maybe at the very least, you know, for all we know, they've had a few trysts just to say, hey, how you doing?
Just for old time's sake?
Yeah, just for old time's sake.
We can hope. I mean, Johnny Depp is also single again. I don't know what, I mean, Winona Ryder is, to my knowledge, not married. I don't know if she has a significant other, but that also seems like that could be, you know, a no-brainer.
And I know that Johnny Depp was always one of your favorites. I don't know if he still is. But
oh, yeah.
Well, then you might want to pick up the new Rolling Stone magazine.
I know. Do you know what? I saw it. I had it in my hands.
Holy cow.
I was visiting a friend last weekend, and she had the new issue. It just came in the mail. I had it in my hands and said, oh, I'm going to have to read this when I have a few minutes later.
Well, it's a long
and I didn't
story.
Have a chance to.
It's
yeah.
a long story, but if you still like Johnny Depp, and I've always liked him as an actor, and I didn't even have a chance to meet him and interview him about 20 years ago when he did Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. And he was a very nice guy, but wow. When you read this story, it's not really a very pleasant picture.
No.
Yeah. It's not a pleasant picture. He's a great actor. He had a chance to be the actor of his generation, but wow, I don't know what's happened to him personally. But
Yeah, he's kind of a hot mess right
now.
Yeah,
you might not want to read that story. I got news for you.
I know.
But anyway, Well, Emily, once again, thank you so much. As I said, if today it was anything memorable, I will come away with two things that I will always now remember about you. A, Emily Amrani does not want to grow up.
Right.
And the one that I love, and from now on I'm going to be describing you as this, Emily Amrani, somebody who roots for love.
Yes.
I root for love. And on that note, we will talk to you next week, and hopefully you will continue to root for love, and we'll hear about more people who you're rooting for.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds good. All thanks, right. Jim.
Well, take care.
Thanks.
And that concludes another episode of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted on WGNplus.com. Thanks you for listening. I am here on business. I'm only here for fun. Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, the only podcast from the end of the web to your screen.